Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, brought to you by The Athletic. It's a podcast. We come twice a week and talk about life as a Watford fan. And it's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good at the moment because Watford won 6-0, as you know, of course, on the weekend. And it was 1-0 today away at Preston. And that's very special because Watford have not won at Deepdale since 1979. I was 2 months old. Mike was 2 years old, Mike?
Yeah, 2 years old.
And Jason, were you 15?
Take 10 off that, please.
Jace drove the supporters club bus up there.
The minibus. He wasn't old enough for the big one. We did this thing on Twitter. We asked you to finish a sentence. I'll tell you what I noticed. What did you notice about this game?
I'll tell you what I noticed, and that's that I do not miss that anxiety knot in the pit of your stomach when Watford are trying to see out a game. I have to be honest, I haven't really felt it much this season. I haven't really felt the jeopardy because I've either felt like we've got plenty of games to remedy it, or I've felt we've been so poor in the game that it's difficult to get too het up about it. But tonight felt like a real important game after the big win on Saturday. That was a statement, but it would only be a proper statement that meant something if we followed it up with a win. And having got ourselves into a situation where we were ahead, it just felt like it was a massive pivotal game. And to hang on, it was just, I was like, oh, this feeling, this sort of that anxiety, that knot in your stomach for the last 10, 12, 13 minutes. And, you know, they seemed to get closer and closer and closer. And John Marks on the commentary said, oh, Watford saw it out easily. I was like, oh, my gosh, did they? I didn't feel like it. But, yeah, it's great to have that feeling back because it means something again. And that can only mean that Watford on the right track. Huge, huge win and really impressed with the way they saw it out, despite my over-the-top nerve.
Yeah, well, we're up to third and we're 54 points. And all season, I've had 52 points in my head because Malky Mackay was obsessed with 52 points, wasn't he? Mm. We're safe, lads. We're not going down this year. Jason, for you, though, as a game, yeah, we didn't talk. Mike talked about it with Kelly and with Adam, who will be joining us in a bit. They spoke about Saturday's game. You know, what did you see in terms of a development from Saturday? It was still the 4-3-3. It was dominant.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was still a 4-3-3. I think there's probably a couple of things I noticed. The first thing was I thought the wide men up front were probably less wide than they were on Saturday. They seemed to play a little bit narrower. Certainly, Kiko was looking to exploit the space down the right-hand side that created. Messina did for a key moment, I think, in the second half, but less so perhaps than Kiko did throughout. Which I don't mind. That's quite good. Just move the Preston defence about a bit. I'm sure that's a tactic we'll see deployed in future games as well. I also thought the central three were perhaps a little bit more structured. I don't know. Hughes obviously was the sort of the deeper lying of the three again. On Saturday, they were very fluid. And there are a lot of times where I thought Hughes would then sort of make forward runs past the other two. Whereas tonight, I thought that happened less so, maybe a bit more structured in terms of Hughes sitting a bit more deeper. That didn't mean he was sort of shying away from the attack, but generally always seemed to be behind the other two.
The midfield felt very strong to me, and that's not what I felt for a while. But Mike, you know, Roy Cripps, he says, I'll tell you what I noticed, a full commitment going forward away from home and looking up for it. Amazing. And it was a full commitment until the end. And again, that's what we saw on Saturday. But the big feeling was it definitely felt different from a 1-0 away win we've had, well, first half of the season. A very different feeling.
definitely. I think Watford, you know, Watford's first shot on target was the penalty. So that tells its own story, but it doesn't tell the full story. I think, as Jason said, as alluded to there, it was a much more threatening, structured, full of ideas sort of Watford that took the field. Whilst they didn't create many chances at all, they looked threatening. They asked questions, and that sometimes is enough, especially when you're away from home and especially when your opposition is always like to avoid talking ill of the opposition. But they weren't great, Preston, weren't they? They weren't any great threat themselves, apart from set pieces. That was incredibly frustrating. They seemed to be so good from set pieces, and that's somewhere where we still seem to struggle. But they were happy just to try and sit deep. They were wasting time early. And they were very direct in their play, weren't they? Where Watford, it looked like they had so many more strings to their bow, bringing the key players in. And, you know, what we've been asking for all season, get Hughes in the centre there, get Saar in. And his sort of performance was interesting. He came in narrower, didn't he, and tried to get Kiko on the overlap. It didn't quite work. But finally, we're asking creative questions. And like was Roy said, it was backed up with commitment. You know, Tom Cleverley roaring around the place from minute one to minute 94, the defence, you know, if they went, they went committed. They won the balls and they did it without fouling late on, which was important. So it felt like there was a little bit of guile, a little bit of attacking intent, a little bit of that fluidity that we've been crying out for. You know, I used that word so often in the first half of the season when the performances just weren't anything to write home about, that fluidity and dynamism. And you're not always going to be able to swat sides aside, swat. You're not always going to be able to swat sides aside. Sides aside, five aside. You know what I mean. And sometimes you're just going to have to dig in. And they did that tonight. But, you know, the stats won't be as impressive as they were against Bristol City. But the performance as a whole, I thought, it spoke to a more promising future. And I think they will, the front three will have more joy against other teams if we play like that.
We're now joined by Adam Leventhal. Adam, are you in a train station?
I am in a train station. I left sort of on the B of the bang on the final whistle. The train that I was originally going to get has been delayed now, so it means that I may not get home and I might be sleeping in a train station in the Midlands somewhere. But doesn't matter, we won 1-0 and we won against Preston for the first time since December 1979. So I was 1 month old the last time that we beat them. So there you go.
So you've been to the press conference. You've heard what the main man has to say. We had one of our one of these things people noticed in the game. You know, Ben Chapman noticed the fact that it feels like a more tactical performance than any we've had under Cisco so far. Did he give that sort of vibe? Did you see that? Is that what he was talking about in the press conference?
He spoke well after the game. He felt that there was a lot of things right about the performance. I think from my own perspective, you know, just watching in particular that first half, what was fantastic, and it's what we've been crying out for a lot this season, is that an opposition were actually worried about us rather than us being worried about an opposition. And that says something when we're going away from home. Yes, we've won 6-0 at the weekend and people will be going, hang on a minute, yeah, we need to be a little bit worried about them. But on the whole, it was Preston worried about us. They had obviously those good chances in the first half and Ched Evans should have put his opportunity away. But on the whole, they controlled the game. And that was just fantastic to see. They just picked up from where they left off against Bristol City. Will Hughes was obviously just running things. Tom Cleverley was doing exactly what he was doing against Bristol City. So was Nathaniel Shalabar. And although, you know, that there needs to be maybe a little bit more quickness of thought and a few more quick passes in central areas in the attacking third, they're still getting acres of space down both flanks and looked dangerous once again. It was just like, it was almost like muscle memory. They just knew where everyone was going to be. There was moments when Cleverley just knew that Kiko was going to be outside him on the right-hand side, just play the ball into space. And that is a really, really positive thing to see, that they've got this momentum, they've got this belief, and they've got this confidence now, which is fantastic.
Ad, can I ask, and by the way, shame on you all for not calling it the Preston Conference, by the way, but we'll brush past that. I watched the Bristol City goals back, and you know you have to say a lot of them were down to pretty suicidal Bristol City defending or mistakes, and obviously they were weakened. How did Cisco seem tonight, Adam? Did he seem visibly happier with that result than he did with the Bristol City one? Because Nate Chalabar was on Hornet Hive afterwards, and he made that point. He said that he was ecstatic after this game compared to the Bristol City one because this was a very different challenge. How did the head coach feel about it?
I think clearly, and this sort of came to light after the game against Bristol City. Obviously, there'd been a bit of turbulence after the game against Coventry, and they had that team meeting and they all got together. So I think that maybe there might have been a bit of a feeling of, from Chisco's point of view, of, right, hang on a minute, what's going on here? I mean, I'm enjoying this, but okay, they've started to play and they're all sort of tuned in. This is good, but maybe there was a little bit of confusion or a little bit of detachment. I'm not quite sure. But this evening, yes, it was sort of the old Chisco back, and especially towards the end in stoppage time, they were buzzing around like my favourite Huddersfield technical area that I always mention. But yeah, they were really, really on it. They were sort of encouraging, and you could see that they were elated at the end. And I think that that's a really good thing. And, you know, clearly the senior players have got together and said, look, come on, we need to sort of almost not do this on our own, but we need to take some ownership of this situation. And we need to actually go, right, if we want to get up, we're the ones that are going to have to play well. So it was nice to see both things sort of come together this evening. And there's a lady who walks past me with her little suitcase. Can you hear that lovely audio
there?
Yeah,
lovely. She's got 3 points safely tacked inside it.
Yeah, yeah. Wonderful. Fantastic. Just look, it's like being on the Archers. I'm actually at home. Yeah, I'm actually at home just doing this by myself. Just sort of putting a glass in some gravel. Anyway, I digress.
That's how I celebrate every Watford win. Let's all toast. Let's raise a glass of gravel to Chisco Munoz and his concrete heroes.
Let's hear a little bit what Chisco had to say in the press conference.
I think it was a good performance for us. We give the very good team spirit. We were very hard, and we played with passion. We have to control the game in the first half. And the second half also, we lose sometimes the moments. But we was everyone together. We work very hard. We play like what our fans want see today. Sure, we have a lot of games. I repeat the same what we say the last game. Now is the moment for enjoy 20 minutes. After the 20 minutes, we need to start prepared for the next game. Only I can say today, I'm very happy with the guys because they give the passion, they play with the spirit, with determination. This is our club, this is our style, this is our challenge, and we need to follow this away.
It seemed as if you were very comfortable. Everyone was tuned in to exactly what they needed to do this evening.
Yeah, I think that the team was, in all the situations of the game, I think it was brilliant, you know. In the first half, I think we have more to control the game. We tried the riff, we have the collateral, we have shoot outside the penalty area. We have more to control with the ball, the position of the ball. Also, we have the control with the position of the ball. We change one side to another side with the good velocity with the ball. If you tell me what you need, something more, I say maybe one goal in the first half, you know, maybe after we change more the game. But well, and after the second we start, we can score, and after sometimes something happens, you know. Also, they play against us and they try to push us, and also they have the opportunity. I don't know if they shoot or not in the post or not. This is the way. The most important is in another time, clean sheet. We continue. We have a good order. We have a good organization in defense and in attack, and we need to continue work hard. Our way is far. We need to continue. I think we can get better every day, and we need to continue and follow every day the hard work.
Jason, Adam mentioned there Chalabar. He definitely, for me, you know, we saw him for the first half on Saturday, but he really had a great game. Again, he's been a bit hit and miss this season. What would you think was the thing that made him a hit today?
I think he's just got a bit of freedom now. Playing in a three, and it's probably the same for Cleverley as well. The fact that he can play in a more advanced position, he's not playing that protective role, he's not playing that quarterback role either. So he's got this sort of freedom to get forward, to play the sort of quick passes where we need them in sort of threatening positions. That's been the problem for him this season, is that people have sort of picked out his passing. And I think some of that is because the cohesion between the team has just not been there. We've been disjointed. And I think one of the key things that we've seen in the 4-3-3 is that there's always options to pass to. There's always a short. There's always someone in space. And that just makes his job a whole lot easier. So I think there's going to be a confidence lift of the players playing a way that they clearly like, which will lift him individually, but also the fact that the team are playing better, there's options for him to pass to. It just suits him and Tom Cleverley as well, giving him the freedom to sort of buzz around the pitch, gives those guys in midfield the freedom to play and express themselves how they want to play.
We missed them against QPR, but I thought Kiko and Messina both get forward, don't they? And they look, you know, Messina in particular, with no, you know, we know how good Kiko is going forward. But I thought Messina getting forward today, and he looked, you know, determined and skillful in times. It was his lovely little dink into the ball that ultimately unlocked the defence for the penalty, wasn't it? Do you think having, you know, those guys having the confidence of in Sir Alta in the heart of defence, who has been absolutely brilliant since he came in? Cathcart came in and didn't set a foot wrong today, did he? Giving Trusty Kong a rest, one assumes. But having that heart of the defence sorted allows, give those two guys confidence to get forward. And do you think that has an impact, Jason and Adam, on that midfield and particularly Chalabar, and allows, frees him up a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I think it ties in with what I said. And as well as having those two guys, or having a rock solid central defensive partnership as well, that sort of that anchor man sitting in front of them in Will Hughes, knowing you've got that sort of extra level of protection there as well, does give the fullbacks a bit more freedom to get forward. I think I said earlier, I think Kiko got forward a bit more than Messina did today, but Messina got forward and used the space at key points. So not too big a loss there. And yeah, and like you say, that then provides the other guys with another option. And we talked about the guys up front playing a bit narrower, again, creating that space. And with all that movement that you've got, it moves the opposition around a lot more. That if you're playing a much more static 4-4-2 like we've been in the past, where you're almost saying the wide midfielders and the two strikers, right, they're doing the attacking, the rest of you move up as a unit, but you've got to work as a complete as a six almost, or as a four with the full backs and the two in midfield, without having that sort of freedom to sort of move around the pitch and sort of play those triangles. It becomes a lot more static. You're defending, you're attacking, whereas now it's almost like everyone's getting involved. And we still see from time to time, we still see the centre-backs able to attack the ball and move forward. I know Sierra Alta certainly did it on Saturday, where he was able to pick the ball up, bring it out into space. Yes, we were playing a Bristol City side with absolutely no confidence, but yeah, he still had that option to move forward with the ball because he knew there are other players there that would protect him in that fluid system.
Adam, can I ask what it was like in the ground? Because we're quite effusive tonight. We're all quite happy. We're quite giddy because we've seen another semi-decent performance. I think it's important not to get carried away, because whilst it was good, it was better, it was more fluid, what we actually created was limited. And I think that's fine. We're away from home. But Preston did put us under a little bit of pressure, didn't they? That Chet Evans, as you mentioned, should have scored. They looked like a threat every time they got the ball into the box, didn't they? If we didn't win that first header, it was bobbling around. And on another day, I think they certainly could have equalised. So I think it's important to see that. How did you feel actually sat in the ground, Ad, about how in control Watford were and how close they are to being, you know, a genuine challenge? I mean, it's only a week since we sat here, really. It was a week on Saturday that we were quoting Don Goodman. We'd just watched the Watford Coventry game, and I was re-quoting him saying, it's impossible for Watford to go up playing like that. And it was right, we can't carry on playing like that. We seem to have turned a corner. It's over a very small corner because it's only been a week. But how did it feel, Ad, in the ground? Did we feel like a better side watching? Or are there still signs of things that we need to worry about?
There's still definitely areas to improve upon. But I think, as I mentioned before, they just looked like a confident outfit. They looked like they were a team that had arrived in town. Do you know what I mean? That sort of, mm-hmm. they had a bit yeah. of presence about them. They had a bit of swagger about them.
Yeah.
They had that sort of feeling that they were just popping passes off. They just had a presence, which I thought was really, really good to see. There was an edginess to some of the people that were watching the game. I mean, there was sort of club staff and things like that. There's one guy that he was sort of living and breathing the game. I don't know what his role was, but, you know, he was getting really frustrated because he could see how sort of one-dimensional Preston were. And yeah, you're right. When they were throwing the balls into the box, they did look dangerous, and especially towards the end, they threw on a couple of bigger lads. And we'd obviously taken Chalabar off. I think Dan Gosling did well when he came on again, and he does also which I think is an interesting sort of point, is important to sort of mention in terms of Gosling, that you don't lose that physicality when he comes on and replaces Chalabar. So it's sort of almost like for like, which is good to see. But in general terms, in the ground, it was really odd because, of course, there was the crowd noise. And it was like quite a...
Was that actually in the ground? I thought it was in the ground. Oh, whoa.
Yeah. So they had...
Oh, that must be haunting.
Was like, I don't know who was doing it, Jean-Michel Jarre or whatever, but it was like a proper sound technician, you know, like sort of raising it up and all this sort of stuff.
Adam, he doesn't have your amazing Foley techniques of gravel.
Yeah, exactly. But it was, you know, a proper sort of audio experience. But it is super weird. But I think that sort of added a little bit of sort of, I don't know, a bit of va-va-voom to the whole thing. So I quite enjoyed it. I could tell that a lot of people watching on Hive Live and on Sky, I think a lot of people thought, oh, that's just the Sky audio.
Yeah, definitely.
And also, I think people on Hive Live felt that it sounded a bit weird. Well, it was weird in the ground, but I think that, you know, it got everyone sort of the blood pumping a little bit for the players. And they just, I don't know, they just seemed together. And that was something that Tom Cleverley had said and Nathaniel Chalabar after the Bristol City game. You know, there'd been a bit too much sort of backbiting and things like that. And there's none of that. Mm. Everyone's sort of rallying around, getting together. And you know what? One thing that really sums up the whole evening, I thought, is that I think it was just towards sort of half time, Ismaïl Assar ripped off his gloves and threw them to the side. And I thought, the gloves are off. We're going to do it this evening. They are literally off. And, you know, although it wasn't his most... you know, flamboyant display. It didn't sort of live up to Bristol City. He did a lot of work. He was getting back, and you know, I think he seems to be sort of enjoying it again, and sort of, you know, encouraging others, and there seems to be that unity. I'm just sort of thinking back when João Pedro and him had a bit of a sort of a, you know, a bit of a ratty sort of argument, and they were getting all antsy with each other, and you see there was none of that. So, you know, hook or by crook, they've started to sort of garner this unity. And they've got better players playing. You know, Will Hughes having him in the side now. It's just brilliant. And he loves it. You can clearly see that he's really enjoying it. And Tom Cleverley, to his credit as well, you think about all the little injuries he was picking up here and there. And he was never really being able to stay fit for a long period of time. You know, he's played pretty much the whole season, hasn't he? He's barely had a game out. I mean, he might have had a couple, but I can't quite remember. He's been playing and he's really, really ratting around and leading a press and all that sort of stuff. So it's great to see. So, you know... all round a good night's work, tough night's work, gritty night's work, a proper battle from Watford, and another, you know, big 3 points and another clean sheet. You've got to mention Backman's, you know, contribution as well. His contribution and his distribution. His distribution at times there was a few that flung over the head of, you know, Messina, for example, and things like that. But he's on it. You know, he seems to be adding something to the whole equation as well. So, you know, credit to them this evening.
Six clean sheets in eight for Backman. It's quite incredible.
Michael, you are naughty. You did a question to Adam there, and you snuck in a negative. I heard it in there, young man. You know, the goal, we're amazing. We're like over 20 minutes into this podcast. We haven't actually mentioned the penalty. And João Pedro, there was, as you sort of said, you know, there was a lacking, let's say, in the final third, which we have said on many, 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 many occasions this year. But it felt like... You know, the balls were going into the box. There was more danger. If we weren't actually scoring as many goals we scored on Saturday, there was more danger as Watford went ahead. But the penalty, how were you feeling about that one? Because I hate that little stutter that some of them they do in that penalties. I wasn't confident as he ran up.
What I really liked about it was that he was calm, cool and considered. He took his time. He sort of went through a bit of a mental checklist. He was flattening down the area by the penalty spot. You know, we've seen, they were talking afterwards about another not great pitch. I don't know, Andy, you can confirm or deny what the state of the pitch was.
It wasn't too bad. Okay. It was okay.
Sandy patches. But he was obviously making sure that where his foot that he was going to plant was going to be safe. He waited for all the defenders to stop doing all their yip-yapping. Wait until everything was calm. He waited until he was ready. And then he just smashed it into the back of the net. So as far, you know, when they go in, they're great, aren't they, penalties? But he hit it so hard, one out of the Troy Deeney playbook. And, you know, it's obviously the first thing that you think of when it was announced by the club that Troy's going to miss a couple of weeks. So, you know, obviously best wishes to him and hopefully he recovers soon. And lo and behold, Watford win a penalty without our penalty taker on the pitch. So you do think, oh, crikey, this is the story's written, isn't it, in the Stars that he's going to miss it. But yeah, I thought he was cool, calm, composed. And he's been, you know, he's been nothing other than confident throughout this season, João Pedro. You know, he looks to, if you imagine him in your mind's eye, you think he's quite diminutive, quite small in stature, sort of quite impish, if you like, but not a bit of it. He is tough. He never takes a step backwards. He's always willing to take the ball on. He's quick. He's quick-footed.
And he loves a bit of confrontation. At least once a game, he's in someone's face.
He does, but I love that. And he's above all else, he's confident. And you know me, I'm never confident. You know, Watford 4-0 up, I'm still thinking, crikey, this is going to make some sensational headlines when we lose this 5-4. But he did everything right, didn't he? He deep breath, set himself, smashed it into the back of the net. What a player, and another great performance. And his quick feet to win the penalty, so only right that he took it. The only question I had was it going to be Ismaïl Assar or him? I guess because he won it, he took it. But yeah, it was what I loved about the whole thing as well, was that we just unlocked it. And that's all you need to do in these games. Get the unlock, create one chance, score it and move on. So yeah, but to answer your question, John, I was as confident as I think I could ever be about a penalty. Good stuff, Xiao.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Mike, Matt Churchill noticed, he said in the pre-match Hive Live interview, there was an error in the caption stating that Ken Semmer is a Watford FC winger. It should have read, an absolute legend. You got to interact a little bit, didn't you, with Mr. Ken Semmer this week?
Well, secondhand. So if you may have noticed, the eagle-eyed of you may have noticed that on Saturday there was a bit of confusion amongst some outlets about the first goal, with some places giving it as a Bristol City own goal when pretty clearly it came off Ken Semmer. So that had given rise to a bit of confusion in the ranks, and I think there was a bit of ribbing, or I can imagine there was a bit of ribbing for Ken about that, certainly with Will Hughes being awarded his when it looked like it was going pretty much towards the sensory room instead of into the top left-hand corner. So I think there was a bit of fun and games going on at Watford. And knowing my situation with Opta, the club got in touch just to sort of discuss it and to try and find out what happened, and I talked them through it and explained the situation. But then they obviously wanted me to help play a little prank on Mr. Semmer by way of a voicemail.
Well, let's hear that in a feature called Watch Out, Mike is About. Mike is.
One saved message. First saved message received today at 1:15 PM.
Good afternoon. This is Mark from Opta Sports Data. Just calling with reference to the Watford Bristol City game that took place at the weekend. As requested, we have reviewed the footage of that first goal. And having completed that investigation, just only to confirm that we are sticking with the original call, that is a Bristol City own goal. So just to confirm, Watford beat Bristol City the weekend. Goal number one confirmed as a Bristol City own goal. Please don't hesitate to give me a call if you need any more information or clarification. Thanks very much indeed. Cheers for now.
It was my goal, no?
You tell us.
Yeah, of course it was mine. You didn't see it. You have to appeal, yeah? No? You're joking. I know you're joking. Yeah.
Come on.
Okay, you get me there. You get me. Yeah.
Mike is. he took it very well. I did like that, Mike, because, you know, you worry about modern day footballers who are very, very, very professional people, but they absolutely got him. And those, I love it. You can just see that moment where he goes, "You got me."
Yeah. You'd expect, you know, I don't know Ken Semmer, but you'd expect nothing less from him. Just seeing his, just his face break out into that massive smile when he realised he'd been had, and I did a little tweet apologising, and he tweeted back saying, "You got me." And it was just, yeah, really, really nice. From a personal sort of point of view, it's just lovely to get those little interactions. And, you know, we've interviewed lots of Watford players and members of staff through the 10 years that we've been doing From the Rookery End, but it still gives you a little buzz, you know, to know that, you know, just to have that little interaction with a player. So and just great to realise that Ken Semmer's obviously such a good bloke as we think he is. So yeah, absolutely brilliant. And there's just another, I think it just speaks as well of the positivity around the place at the moment. It can change so quickly in football. It's a cliche. We're very quick to sort of talk about the negativity and trying to diffuse it a little bit, but whilst also recognising it was pretty grim. Well, it feels a lot better now, doesn't it? And I think that little clip that the club put out, that prank they played on Ken, just shows that we're moving hopefully in the right direction. But yeah, wonderful stuff. Yeah, absolutely brilliant from Ken.
I think he will be many Watford fans' sort of player of the season because they just love him and his personality and the bubble that he sort of, the energy he has. But Mike, you know, but Jason, you know, the classic one here. I'm just flicking through our social media. It's at Watford Podcast, of course, on Twitter, on Facebook, and Instagram. You know, there is, just after these last two games, there's a big call. Actually, Jimmy Armchair, he noticed that Will Hughes is going to win Player of the Season. He's getting there, but he's not going to take over from Kiko, is he? Not quite yet.
Yeah, that's a big shout, because obviously Hughesy missed a big, big chunk of games. So to nominate someone who's only played, I guess, a handful of games compared to the others, that's a big call. But I'm more than happy to see Will continue playing in the same vein for the rest of the season and be in with a shout. But yes, I think he'd still have to go some, or Kiko would have to have a bit of a dramatic drop in form to not get it in my eyes. So it's good to be able to have the sort of the difficult choices, isn't it? Because let's be honest, last season had we been asked to vote for a player of the season, that would have been
Harry Hornet.
Difficult for all the wrong reasons, whereas now it's difficult for all the right ones.
Difficult decision. It, just say for the sake of argument, Will Hughes isn't available. 5 minutes is up. Back to a negative. Who replaces Will Hughes in this side? If because, you know, he has been unlucky with injuries. If something was to flare up, we've been excited and positive tonight. But Will Hughes has been the catalyst, or certainly for a lot of people, the catalyst for these decent performances. Who replaces him if he's unavailable?
It's interesting you say that, Mike, because Paul Smith said the one that he noticed was that Will needs to be on the ball as much as possible. And then Steve Chambers says, he said he noticed is, forget Tom Brady, Will Hughes is the best ever quarterback. You know, this is a lot of pressure on a man, isn't it, Jace?
It is. We could see if Daniel Tosier is available, because he was a fantastic quarterback, wasn't he, during that time. For me, I think, I mean, it's early days and we've only seen a sort of half and a quarter, I think, from Dan Gosling, but I'd be more than happy to see Daniel Gosling come in and do that job. Certainly from the role of protecting the defence, I think his timing in the tackle is really good. I noticed that on Saturday. There were, I think, at least three occasions where he's made a timely challenge, either sort of coming in from behind, where he sort of intercepted or got between man and ball, or just known when to attack the player, attack the ball, and made a good challenge, and that really impressed me. So I'd be happy to see him take on that role. I guess if you, as another alternative, you've got Ben Wilmot as an option, but I think for me it would be Gosling first up.
Yeah, he's impressed. I thought quick feet as well, which I think he might have surprised a few. It certainly surprised me. Great performance on Saturday, I thought, the second half. And yeah, again, he almost unlocked the defence late on again, didn't he? So yeah, thank you for that, Jason. I was just getting slightly concerned that I hadn't asked a pressing question with the slightly negative overtones for too long.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
We're playing again, Derby on a Friday night. That one was in mid-October. We said at that point, I think, Mike, that game was going to be the start of the season because it was the day that the transfer window closed. But Adam, you know, we saw one change today, and I'm not a fan of rotating for rotating sake. You know, I don't like it when a player, you know, it's almost like, oh, well, we need to get the rest in him. I preferred like today where you think, no, let's go and put the best team out there and maybe sub them a bit earlier for one game than you would another game. Do you get a feeling that that's the way that Sissoko's going to stick with the team, his best starting 11?
I think I'm on the train now, by the way. I'm actually on the train.
Hello, come in. I'll make you a cup of tea.
Anyway, it was an interesting one tonight because everyone would have gone, you've got to go again. You've got to play your same team. But it was a really sort of bold decision, I think, to actually do that because, you know, there's another game, what, in 3 days?
Yeah,
so I think, you know, to have stuck with that team, you know, he made his... And he didn't really tinker with it too much. He got his subs on, you know, late on with Stipe Perica and Philip Zinkanago. Obviously, Gosling came on for Shalabar. It's almost as if... I wonder if they've had a conversation almost to, you know, like in the olden days when you knew that you were going to have a run of games and there might have been a few injuries or whatever. You just sort of go to everyone, look, we're all in this together. Let's just get through these three games and see if we can build some spirit. I would be very surprised if he made any sort of significant changes against Derby in terms of the midfield, up front, you know, in that front three. He might then just bring back, you know, William Chooster-Kong. That might just be the one change that he makes. And, you know, that's great to see. I mean, there has to be a little bit careful. It might have been, I don't know, he's probably caught between a rock and a hard place, really, because if he'd made too many changes, people would have gone, oh, look, you've ruined it. You know, we were on to a good thing.
Also, lad, I think you mentioned Tom Cleverley playing a lot of games. Ismail Assar has played virtually every game. So I think in terms of, I know that it's not just playing every game. It's the fact they're in a short space of time, isn't it? But I think confidence still is relatively fragile. I think I don't think we can get too carried away. I think this is very much a work in progress, and we haven't left ourselves any wiggle room. And I think with that in mind, they just need to stick with it. And I think I'd like to see the same starting 11 on Friday night. I think the players themselves would like to see the same starting 11 on Friday night. And perhaps crucially, I think Derby County would not like to see the same starting 11 on Friday night. What did just want to ask, you mentioned Philip Zinkernagel there, Ad. He looked like he struggled a little bit to get up with the pace of the game to me. He looked like not great. Obviously, he's talented. Obviously, he's got great feet. Obviously, he's a skillful player. But he was a yard off it, wasn't he? And then the Watford had a breakaway, had a chance to bury it. He could have scored. He didn't know much about it. Bounced off his knee, and the Preston player was able to clear it. But Watford were away. They had, I think it was 3-on-2. Zinkernagel threw the centre, and all he had to do was play a ball. All he had to do, he had options, right or left. He opted to play it left and underhit it pretty badly, and then let Preston sort of counter-attack, or they could have counter-attacked. Was he, I'm not going to say he's a concern, but did we see perhaps why he hasn't been pushing so much for a starting place?
Maybe. I mean, I think it's always difficult when you come off the bench to make a big impact when you're sort of trying to contain a match. But you're right, you know, he did look a little bit off it. He gave away a silly free kick. He should have just sort of cleared the ball at one point. And afterwards, both Will Hughes and Tom Cleverley sort of came up to him and just basically went, just stick it up there, will you? Just stick it up into the other half of the pitch. Just don't mess around with it there. And I think he didn't look as sharp as he could have done. Thankfully, it wasn't a costly thing. So he can use it as a learning experience rather than taking, you know, a big dent in terms of his confidence. And that's fine. You know, that is showing that, yes, he might not be really, really putting in performances in training to displace anyone at the moment. But if you think about it, he's basically being put in the midfield because he's unlikely to be picked in front of Sema or Sarr in his natural attacking wide position. So he is also getting used to being in a different position himself. So it was interesting seeing it, but I think it was a minor subplot. And I think overall, this is all sort of building up his experience, I suppose, in a new country.
That's it. I'm all out of negatives. Got nothing left.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Forever or just for this podcast?
Well, for the next 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, damn. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. We'll be back, of course, after the game against Derby County on Friday night. You can, of course, subscribe to The Athletic. If you go to theathletic.com/rookeryend, you get it for half price at the moment. But you can read all the world-class analysis and coverage that The Athletic put on by subscribing at theathletic.com/rookeryend. Thank you very much, Mike.
Dane, no problem. Well done, Watford. Well done, everybody.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Adam.
I don't know where I'm sleeping this evening, ladies and gentlemen, but it's been a good old night. So take it easy. Cheers, gents.
Safe journey.
All the best.
The Athletic.